Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Upfront on Football Ramble Presents. I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
On today's show, there was no FA Cup fairy tale for Bridgewater, but we look at some of the intriguing mini upsets from across the fourth round on Sunday. Over in India, the Matildas crashed out of the Asian Cup quarterfinals, just 18 months out from co-hosting the World Cup. What's going wrong for Australia's national team? And we take a look at the landmark new reforms around maternity cover for players announced last week, but what still needs to be done.
Et Gerber qui va lever son ballon. Et ça fait 3 buts à 1. Et celui-ci, le nouveau doublé pour Ada Hegerberg.
Gruner. Van der Sonden. Drives it across. Brilliant header. Viviana Miedema.
The power of the shot by Lucy Bronze means it's unstoppable. And so are England.
Big weekend. Big weekend for all of us. So much happened. I was in Butlins. I fell down the stairs. Hurt my ribs. I was listening to the Wenger boys perform one of the greatest concerts I've ever seen. Chloe was assistant manager to Crystal Palace's women's win over Lewis.
Huge weekend. Yeah, I got promoted.
Went full Sam Allardyce in the dugout.
It really escalated over the weekend. Yeah, I mean, I was expecting this call up, if I'm honest. It's been there. It's been on the books for quite a while now. And so I joined the bench, the dugout, got to be in and around, the real action, really. Yeah, I was in charge of the subs.
What was your style? Did you like crouch? Did you sit on the cooler?
It was more about...
Yeah, did you have a seat or did you have to...
Well, I'd been practicing some looks, like you said. So it was very much kind of like a pensive type vibe, mm-hmm. Very kind of like, considering subs, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Really just important things.
Were you allowed to give your thoughts on the game or was it strictly like the coaches and the analysis will do that? Or were you like, I think we need to go three at the back?
I did give a little bit of input on the analysis just with the goalkeeping perspective, but not too much in the kind of formation and stuff like that. I was like, I'll leave that to the experts. It's my first time.
What was your goalkeeping analysis?
Oh, I can't tell you that. It's all top secret.
Ooh, keep the ball out.
Wow. Basically that, yeah. Don't let it in.
Put it in your hand.
I'm really intrigued to see a little roundup of my weekend. Go for it.
Very restful and peaceful weekend.
Half and half. We had a day off. Yeah, we took a day off.
You were at the seaside, weren't you?
I was at the seaside, yeah.
Love that.
Went to a little champagne bar in a lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was
champagne. Very
cute. Had a glass of champagne on a Saturday
afternoon.
Well, the
ramble paying you very well, mate.
What a romantic date idea, Flo.
You should take notes.
I have romantic slander. What else were you up to on the weekend?
Also went to Brighton Reading FA Cup game. Started out slow. Turned out to be really quite exciting.
Yeah, it was quite a chaotic game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit mad. It was like crossbars and like, was the ball over the line and all sorts. Yeah, it ended up Reading 3-2. They were 2-0 up, when it came back to 2-2, and then they...
My question is, was the ball over the line? I think, obviously in the highlights, like where the camera is, it's not a great angle for it, but it looked like to me that the ball bounced right on or slash like ahead of the line, not behind it.
It was, from my angle, also not the best one.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's a kind of, if you don't have VAR, you're never going to be 100% sure on that one.
It was a fun game.
It was, in the end. It turned out to be a really fun game.
Anyone have a game of the weekend? I really enjoyed watching Bridgewater's fans boo Manchester United for 90 minutes. It was really funny. On the highlights, which I think is about like maybe 4.5 minutes, Bridgewater goalie put in a big performance as well. But it was really funny because every single time Beth Howard made a save, they would cheer. And every single time Man United were on the ball, it was just boo. It was
that really
funny. Like, it just made me laugh.
I think maybe my game of the weekend is probably the Southampton one. Also because we got to speak to Marianne Spacey-Cale in the lead up to it, and we had a really nice interview with her. She's just like, she speaks so well about the club and just learning about their ethos and the way they're trying to, the project they're trying to build there. And so to then have them go on and win, like playing in St. Mary's in front of, you know, I think it was 3,500.
Yeah, really good crowd.
Southampton fan scoring a goal for Southampton in St. Mary's Stadium. So that was like a proper little fairy
tale. And they,
tale.
I mean, talk about that Brighton Reading game with sort of the way that Reading were holding on towards the end, that corner, that ball hitting the crossbar. Southampton had some of that as well. That one that goal cleared off the line. Bristol City were pushing the missed penalty for Bristol City. It had a lot of drama in it, even though it was only 1-0.
Yeah, it was a proper FA Cup tie. So delighted for them that they get to move on and continue their journey. I'm excited for the next one.
Yeah, and we had Marianne Spacey-Cale on the Talksport show that I do, and we were doing the draw, and she was a bit gutted to draw Ipswich Town because she's already played them twice this season. Obviously, you want a WSL side, but I was thinking, mate, this is really ideal because you could get through the quarterfinals, then you get the big scalp on a WSL team. But you played Ipswich twice already. You know how to beat them. They've won one game, lost the other one. So this is perfect because it's probably one of the best chances you've ever had to get to the quarterfinal.
That and, you know, from a wider scale perspective, it means one of them will be going through to the next round, which is great.
Which is great.
Yeah.
And I know it's obviously you want the best chance to get, you know, a big side. But I think long-term vision here, I'm happy with that. Did you have a particular favourite? I mean, obviously Palace did well in that game, but it wasn't an FA Cup game because you'd lost in the...
I thought we weren't going to mention that again, and here it is.
Every week.
Sorry.
Literally every week.
Sorry. But actually, let's go back to the Bridgewater pitch.
Go on.
Because that's a farmyard.
I told you so. I told you all. It is literally like playing on animal fodder. It's horrible.
I really hope that with the cash, which I know they've done quite well of, because I think we mentioned before how the home side keeps the majority of the income on these games, and they sold out Fairfax Park. Great crowd. I hope they manage to put some money into the pitch because obviously we know it's really difficult and the climate crisis is making things even harder for grassroots football. But that pitch was bobbly as hell.
It's bad. It makes it difficult to play good football. And I think that's probably why Man United struggled a little bit. We're not used to pitches like that.
The way that everyone was trying to get the ball just under their feet, it was just constantly moving.
Just to get some kind of control on it.
Yeah.
So they did well, I think. And Bridgewater holding Man United back to just 2-0. I think that's absolutely phenomenal.
And actually, if they hadn't conceded that own goal, poor Charlotte Buxton, it could have been much tighter.
It could have been down to penalties.
I think it was like the 70th minute or something.
81st, I think. Yeah.
Ellertoon got that second goal. Mm. So, I mean, Beth Howard had to do a lot to keep them out, but they didn't play too badly.
I think they did phenomenally. And I think just the exposure now they're going to get from that game. I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was there. I can't even say his name.
Yeah.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
There you go. That sounded better.
I know his daughter, Kana, is an absolute sensation in the academy side. Top scorer, I think, in under-21s women's football right now. And she came on, made her senior debut. Very exciting.
The parents were in the house, made a lot of headlines. Yeah, 13 goals in 12 games in the 21s and probably going to be a big star of the future. So that's very exciting. And everyone at the Bridgewater game got to kind of witness a bit of history.
One to watch. What a place to make your debut.
Yeah, and I'm excited, having heard a lot and spoken a lot to Bridgewater in the lead up to that game. I'm really excited to see like where they go forward at this. I think this is the start of something really big for them. Another little sneaky, we'll call it an upset. It's two WSL sides, but I think it still does still count as an upset. Leicester beating Spurs 3-1.
Interesting. Yeah. Very, very interesting. Obviously, I think that was not expected. I think we all thought that Spurs on balance were probably going to win this one. But Leicester, I mean, come on. I mean, they're coming off the back of some pretty good performances recently. And I think, you know, now looking at the game ahead with Birmingham, you know, I'm seeing them going into that with a little bit more confidence than they otherwise would have had.
Definitely. Huge game this weekend between Birmingham and Leicester. My question for you guys, though, is it a bit of a distraction still being in the hat for the FA Cup?
Well, what was really funny was that in the pre-match press conference, Lydia Bedford actually said about the FA Cup, like, obviously it's a special cup, we love it, but our focus is staying up.
Yeah.
So they weren't...
Because that's more important long-term.
Yeah, so it was almost like they weren't... I don't even know if they were... Obviously they weren't going out to lose, but I don't think they were necessarily expecting to win.
Yeah.
And whether kind of Spurs heard that and thought maybe this won't be as tough a game as we thought it might be, it definitely didn't seem to be Leicester's focus, the FA Cup. I wouldn't see it as a distraction. If anything, it gives them more of a boost because they're like, not only are we going into this massive match against Birmingham, but we've just beaten, you know, a pretty top side in the WSL. So boosts their confidence. And, you know, I wouldn't say it as a distraction. I'd say for them, any step in the FA Cup is a bonus.
Getting any momentum and confidence.
Yeah, it's a bonus, but they're probably not, you know, looking to end up at Wembley. But for them, cool. We won the game we probably didn't expect to win. Extra kind of confidence, bonus kind of another match, as you say, more momentum. Yeah, I think they'll be pretty happy with that.
And also it's interesting because I think for Spurs, FA Cup is a really important competition for them, because when you don't need to worry about relegation, you've got to be focusing on going deep in these competitions. They've got a Conti Cup semi-final against Manchester City this week. So They could have gone really deep into two cup competitions, which would have been a really successful season for them. So I think Rian Skinner must be really disappointed. And also, yet again, we're looking at their performances and saying there aren't enough goals in your team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does feel a little bit like the wheels are coming off a little bit. And you're right. I think aiming for top three, while Rian Skinner says that it's not something they initially went out to do, I think with their form in the first half of the season, they probably thought we can do that and try and get far in a cup competition. And that's not going to happen now in the FA Cup. So I think they'll be pretty gutted.
I think it's quite helpful for them, to be honest, to be dropped out of the FA Cup. So I think now they can just focus on the Conti Cup and doing what they can to try and maybe secure that Champions League spot. So I think obviously having the additional competition alongside is probably not that helpful. So even though, yeah, I agree, I think Rian Skinner, you know, she's ambitious. She wants the club to do well. She wants the cup. She wants the league. But at the same time, I think, you know, you can't win everything every year. Well, unless you're Chelsea. But, you know, it is coming. But small steps.
I just hope it doesn't knock their confidence because they haven't had the best run of form in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, Matildas got knocked out of the Asian Cup, and one of the Matildas that could really give a helping hand to Spurs is Kia Simon, who all those players will be now be coming back after they were shockingly knocked out. So, I mean, let's get stuck into a bit of Aussie chat because it was a bit of a shock. I think we'd mentioned on the pod before about how they were hands down the favourites for the competition. World Cup on the horizon. They're about, a year and a bit out of that. Home World Cup as well, because they're hosting it. There were huge expectations after a very good Olympic Games in which they just missed out on a bronze medal. To get knocked out in the quarterfinals of this competition, losing 1-0 to South Korea. And Rachel, you sent an article that been written in ABC by Samantha Lewis, a really good Aussie football writer, and you could definitely sense in the country right now in Australia a huge, huge disappointment.
Yeah, but I also think what was really interesting about that article is she spoke about what's realistic from the squad versus what the expectations on the squad are, and I think they are quite different. And I think it is a bit of a, you know, golden generation, if you like. There are some standout players in that squad, and it could also be a fact that we're seeing more of those players now playing in Europe, playing in the WSL, and they're getting professional football, and you know, some of the best players in the world are Australian, and the assumption then is, well, that means the team's going to be one of the best teams in the world. You talk about, I know they had a historic Olympic run, but they didn't have great results in the Olympics when you look at it.
They're a very chaotic team. And this is kind of what I mentioned in my preview for this, which is they're a team that have goals in them, but boy, are they bad defensively. They're very chaotic defensively. And I think if it's kind of similar to England in some ways, the England under Phil Neville especially is they just let themselves down. And I think it hasn't been a great 9 months for Alana Kennedy. She's had a very difficult few months. She had a poor Olympic game. She hasn't been great since moving to City. And then this happens as well, losing the game to South Korea. And I feel like they really need to sort that out.
Yeah, I think trying to figure out how to be cohesive as a team hasn't worked yet. And again, it's this narrative of we did this historic thing in the Olympics. But you look at the Olympics, they just beat New Zealand 2-1. They lost to Sweden. They drew with the US. They beat Team GB, obviously. Lost to Sweden again. Lost to the US again. You know, and then came out in a friendly loss to Ireland. And obviously, Ireland are amazing. But, you know, when you look at it, I know that getting as far as they did in the Olympics for them was historic, but actually the results weren't brilliant. So it's kind of, it's not providing the context behind what they're talking about. And that's probably leading to this false narrative of we should be looking to win the World Cup in 2023 instead of looking at realistically what is achievable with this squad that's got, you know, pretty new manager. Like, if you look at their results, they're not really a team that will beat teams above them. They're not really a team that cause upsets. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think for me, I always look at it and think, oh, well, they're a team that can score loads of goals. So as soon as they figure themselves out defensively, they'll be fine. I think that's what the Olympics really proved. But at the same time, there's a huge over-reliance on Sam Kerr. And what happened in the game against South Korea is she missed such a good chance, basically a tap-in, and she scuffed it. And then there was another chance where she scuffed it. And I think Kia Simon tried to sort of knock it on the follow-up. But I think that over-reliance on her, obviously a huge player, if she has a poor game, everyone kind of crumbles around her.
Yeah, we spoke about this last week as well when we were talking about West Ham, about the over-reliance on one player. And to say something that's going to be considered controversial, Sam Kerr does miss a lot, but she creates so many chances, which is amazing for like for a forward. She does create a lot of goal scoring chances. And when you look at her stats, she's up there with the most goal scoring chances created. But that also means you're going to miss quite a few. So if she's, like you say, having an off day where she's not then making an amazing tap over like she did in the FA Cup, you know, or scoring these kind of these worldies, those misses then become the thing you talk about. And, you know, when you look at the FA Cup final, for example, she did not have a good first half. She missed a lot of chances. But the great thing was she went on then to score two great goals. And you don't then think about that. If you're relying too much on one player and she does have a difficult game, like she's not going to be 100% every single game, then yeah, it's going to become kind of more glaring. And you're right. It is there's one thing to be good up front, but they do struggle at the back quite a bit.
It's massively that. I think, you know, with the Matildas, they're one of these teams that have kind of come in as being, I think there's so much of a press hype around them. You know, they've got the amazing jerseys, as, you know, demonstrated by Flo today.
Beautiful.
You know, they've got Sam Kerr, they've got Caitlin Ford, they've got these big names that you see in the WSL. And I think everyone is expecting them that they're just going to run away and become the new sort of the USAs of big international competitions. But like you said, those kind of things don't happen overnight. And I think when you do have that over-reliance on a couple of key players, when they're not on form, things don't go to plan. But with me, I think there's this sort of like lowered expectation, I suppose. They're always a team that they've gone far and they're getting further in competitions, you know, the best they've ever qualified for the World Cup. And, you know, their position at the moment, their ranking is one of the best that it's ever been. But I think they're always a team that have nearly got there, but haven't quite managed to get any further. So I think that's still yet to come for them. But
I think what's maybe more concerning for me is I feel like I'm looking into the future of what England's home Euros are going to be like, because obviously that this tournament was hosted in India, and actually there's massive disappointment there because India couldn't even finish their group games because a lot of the squad got COVID and they were forced by the rules of the tournament to drop out, which is hugely disappointing for a lot of fans there. But looking at England's home Euros coming up, the reaction to Australia being knocked out of the quarterfinals of the Asia Cup has been so devastating because there is so much expectation and pressure
on the home World Cup next summer. And I feel like I'm looking into the future of what articles and what people are going to be saying when England...
Don't say that.
I think you need to... And what you said about this article, that the ABC News article by Samantha Lewis, is the split in the trajectory of expectations and hype versus the trajectory of a team. And the hype is going to be, you know, up way quicker. Like they're so invested in the Matildas team. They've got great stories in that team, great personalities. You know, people are really kind of invested in these players. And that means the expectation grows really, really quickly. But realistically, when you look at the squad they have, and Gustafsson said this when he kind of initially took over, is they're not World Cup winners yet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they within themselves kind of know that this is a journey and will, you know, maybe take a little while to find that cohesive squad. But because they're hosting it and because they've got this hype and this belief around them, it's like the trajectory of the team versus the trajectory of the expectation are going at different levels. And
yeah, and I guess what's different though to England, and I'm not trying to move the conversation onto something completely different team, but also I think the reality is, like we've said, is actually the quality in the Matildas side is so unbalanced. You've got some players like Sam Kerr who are one of the best in the world, and you've got some players who are playing in the W League, which, no disrespect, the quality is just not as good as some of the leagues in the US and Europe. So you've got a bit of a mismatch in some of the players. You've got players who are in terrible form, players who are in good form. You've got a player like Lydia Williams who played in goal in that quarter final, who's barely played much domestic football this season. You've just got a bit of a mismatch. And I think, unlike England, you've got supposedly, you know, a selection of some of the best players in the world to choose from. And that's why it's like, well, then the hype and the expectation is justified, because they should be getting to major finals and they should be winning things. Whereas I agree with you, I think maybe this is a reality check for Aussies that actually maybe we need to turn the hype down a tad. But I still think in a regional competition like the Asian Cup, it was realistic to expect them to lift that. And they'd got to, I think it's 4 of the last finals.
Yeah, this is the worst they've done in this, or the earliest they've been knocked out.
Yeah, and they've only won it once, but got to the finals a lot and lost back-to-back finals 1-0 to Japan.
Yeah.
So this is like 1-0, losing 1-0 again, this time to South Korea. It's like, God, deja vu. It's turning them into what I think England are, which is like serial losers. And I think it's really hard when you're not the US and you're not, in some ways, Japan, because they tasted that success, and you're not now Canada, because they've tasted success. When you haven't won things, and sorry, guys, I don't count the She Believes Cup as winning anything.
Ew.
You don't know what it's like to win, and you haven't tasted success. And that's why it's great to have someone like Sam Kerr on a side, because she has won a lot. Unfortunately, they didn't win the Champions League, but you need winners. And that's what I fear with someone like the Matildas, I fear with the England team is, and Team GB is, we need winners, because you need that winning mentality. And the US, Canada now, they are going to be ruthless, because they tasted that sweet, sweet success.
I think one other thing you have to factor in, I'm definitely not using as an excuse, because COVID obviously did hit international football all over the world. But when you've got so many of your players playing on the completely opposite side of the world, add that into the fact that you're the host. So therefore, you don't have to take part in any kind of qualifiers. So already you're kind of relying on friendlies. Now, they had the Olympics, which was good, but it's just factoring all, there's just been so many things that have just kind of knocked probably the progress they'd hoped to make in the lead up to the tournament.
I totally get that. But at the same time, I would say Australia kind of banked on that in many ways, because so many of their players decided to play in Europe. So therefore they could hold camps in the past year in Sweden and in other places to bring people together. So I feel like they deliberately put in so many steps in order to make sure that they gave themselves the best chance. They had all of Arsenal's Aussie players leaving early, unlike a lot of the rest of the world, and they all came together in a pre-camp before Dubai. Not many other teams were doing that. And so
it's being the pressures of, you know, well, you have players like that who want to go back and perform well in the WSL. Maybe a part of them, you know, as already qualified, I mean, maybe the pressure's off. Maybe they didn't feel that this was that big of a deal in terms of, you know, them not having to do much to qualify for the World Cup already. And they've still got 18 months left to get themselves set and in the right headspace for that. But, you know, if I was a player going over into a competition like that and I was being regularly played in the WSL, I probably wouldn't have my full heart and focus into a competition like that, knowing I've got to go back and put out an absolute shift in, I suppose, a league that maybe matters to them more.
See, I would have said that if I hadn't seen some of these social media posts, which I know you can say sometimes these are a bit manufactured, but honestly, some of the captions that these Aussies have put in there, they were proper gutted because in their minds, they were going to win this tournament. And that's why I'm getting like, that's so Raven's visions about the Euros this
summer.
But that
was never a guarantee.
Because I'm proper.
Japan in there.
Yeah, but I'm proper.
Reigning defending champions.
Yeah, but Japan are in a
just going to walk in and just.
The thing is, a lot of the other teams in this tournament are in a transition or in a bad patch.
Or lower ranked.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. but like Japan are very much in transition. South Korea, a little bit in transition as well, haven't got as much talent as Australia. So I think in their minds, and this is something, you know, that is a negative, is that in sometimes you just have in your mind, you've already won something mm-hmm. and you make the sort of assumption that it's going to be easy. And then you come up against a team like South Korea who missed a penalty. I mean, they gave you a helping hand to win the game.
It looked like neither of them wanted to win the game.
It was a bit like that, wasn't it?
The chances they had and the misses, like you couldn't miss that penalty that badly again if you tried. You couldn't do that two times in a row. Do you know what I mean? It was a weird one to watch. But I also then think the other thing these players are probably thinking of now is they also now know what's going to be said. So that's going to, that not only is it shit for them that they've gone out when they expected to win, but they're like, oh, we're going to get
have a look at the Matildas captions on Instagram. It is heartbreaking because all of them wanted it so much. And I think that's why I'm also like, oh my God, this is going to be intense for England, is because much like England, Australian women's football is at the most popular it's ever been. People are mad about the Matildas. They're one of the most supported teams, regardless of gender, teams in the country. There is so much hype around them, especially women's sport and someone like Ash Barty winning the Australian Open. Like, there's a lot of hype around women's sport in Australia right now, and these people are big. And with World Cup on horizon, like, the pressure is immense, and I feel like I don't know if they can handle it. And that's why I'm like, the time bomb is almost ticking for me.
Yeah. The one thing I will always say, though, is that we often expect the team that we support, the expectation from major tournament to major tournament is always so high. And it's almost like other teams around you aren't also improving.
They don't
like,
exist.
Women's football is growing everywhere, you know, and majority of countries, especially, you know, European countries, your US, your Canada, Australia, we're seeing more Asian teams as well, are investing more in the game. So, yes, your team might improve, but so is everybody else around you.
And there's such a like, a Western or even just domestic arrogance when you're in your bubble, you think your team is the best, and then you get a hard reality check when you get to a major tournament. You're like, oh, there are actually other good teams out there.
Oh, they also train and have really good players. Yeah.
So but I think at these major tournaments, you also see who the winners are. I mean, Canada won a gold medal at the Olympic Games without really playing exceptionally well.
Scoring
a lot of penalties, and they want to go play. So that is what you've got to do. You've got to play tournament football, and tournament football is hard, and that's why we love it, and that's why it's unique. And also, we have to shout out some of the teams who have blown away the competition this tournament. The Philippines have qualified for the World Cup for the first time in their history. They beat Chinese Taipei on penalties in the quarterfinal of the Asian Cup, get through to semifinals, and that means that you qualify. And that's why this tournament's very exciting, because we get so many World Cup qualifiers out of it. Very exciting for that country. I saw a brilliant interview that was shared yesterday by Radha Gupta, who's been following the Asian Cup. She's an Indian journalist,
great.
And so she's been so excited that they're hosting the tournament. And she was asking about the Filipino team, about what it means to be Filipino, because she was saying, having watched all the quarterfinals, she flew across the country in India to watch the quarterfinals, and she was saying by far the most vocal, spirited, together, united team was the Philippines. And she asked a great question about that, and it was a brilliant answer from the two players, because I think, you know, having a look on social media, there were a couple of questions about the way that the team had come together, because it was a lot of players who had Filipino heritage, grew up in the States and were playing college football. But I thought it was brilliant how they sort of hit back and said, you know, we know what it means to be Filipino, and this is very much a part of our culture and the way we are. And it was a really, really nice clip. So definitely have a look at that on social media. And I think it's just, I love seeing a new team get to the World Cup.
It reminds me of the kind of, you know, we were touched on the FA Cup magic. You know, there's so many moments in tournaments that are so much more than just the scores, the end results. And it's, I know obviously Philippines getting through is massive, but there were also like, I think it was Indonesia when Australia played Indonesia, and pictures of Sam Kerr, they wanted a picture with her afterwards. You know, there's so much more than just the results in these tournaments. It's the exposure, the experience, the inspiration. And it's the same with the FA Cup. You know, Carla Ward touched on that. they lost 12-0 to Arsenal when she was really young, and she was like, it's still one of the best memories that she had. So many people came to see, and it's a similar situation in tournaments like this. You're seeing more teams getting those opportunities and being exposed to top tier football, new audiences. It's magic, and I'm really excited to see the Philippines. It's going to be amazing.
I agree with that. I think it's historic for them, obviously, you know, it being the first time they're going to qualify this year. And I think, you know, what that's going to do for them in terms of, you know, putting them on the map, and there's already articles being written about them. You know, there's interest being had in the players and the squad and their history. And, you know, I was doing my own sort of research on them, and they're such a fairly new team. I mean, they only formed in the 1980s, which is relatively recent considering all the other teams were formed much before that. And I think they were ranked 64th in the world, and now all of a sudden they're qualifying for the World Cup. And I think, you know, that's really going to do stuff for the players in terms of confidence. And, you know, obviously they're going to go into the World Cup as underdogs, but just having the experience of being able to say you're going to a World Cup is just phenomenal. So yeah, credit to them.
Oh, good run. Cross is fizzed in, and Sam Kerr.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Looking for your next podcast binge? Well, look no further. The Offensive is a football mockumentary that follows Premier League club Ashwood City as their money-grabbing owner and his board veer from one crisis to another. Sounds familiar. Well, things are reaching breaking point this January as Real Madrid come calling for Ashwood's star player.
Oh, and Patrick's going to accept €180 million for Kevin.
Wait, hang on. Woody, I'm just getting my dick out.
Ah, fuck you and your dick.
It's just getting my dick out, Woody. It's part of the negotiations. Woody, my dick.
Patrick, these are the new work experience intake for the marketing team.
Hiya.
The Offensive, where the thick of it meets the Premier League. Subscribe now and enjoy more than 130 episodes.
The Offensive is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
So, some good news over the past week around players' contracts for professional footballers in England, because there's going to be some maternity cover and long-term sickness cover for the first time in their contracts. Now, maybe I'm an idiot, and a lot of people listening to this podcast might agree with that, but I had thought that that was already in there for some players, not all players, but I thought a lot of players already had that in their contracts. So I was pretty surprised slash disappointed that this didn't already exist, but I'm relieved that it now does.
I think it was at the discretion of the clubs. Yeah. So yeah, the clubs that could afford it offered it, I guess. So I think now it's something that's going to be written into the, if you're applying to be in the WSL or the FAWC, that you have to have that in, you'd have to be able to provide that, which is amazing. And about time. Like, it almost feels like people have just realised that female footballers have babies too. Like, this has always been a thing. It's like with FIFA saying, oh, we're doing this like small step now, and then we're just going to see how it goes. And then after that, like, we'll see what else we can do. And it's like, this isn't a new phenomenon. And we've had players who have gone away, had a kid or two or three, in the case of like Katie Chapman, and come back and play professional football and play for the country.
I think that's what annoys me, is that my exposure to it has always been content and articles and TV interviews written about players who, oh my God, isn't it remarkable? They've had kids and they come back, and it's like, oh yeah, cool. And now in my mind, I'm like, oh, but they were never actually potentially being fully supported by their clubs to go through that process and come back. Yet the content's there and celebrating them, but actually people aren't even being supported with the right labour rights to be entitled to the support they need. So yeah, it's kind of like a long time coming, but you're like, I know there's so much more to be done. And then that is sort of worries me, because then it's like, well, if you actually dig through the paperwork, Chloe Morgan, attorney at law,
hiya,
you know, you find some absolute shit in there.
Well, I think it's that when I was looking at the FA contracts, and obviously I've been on a contract now for, I think it's about 5 years. And I think obviously the nature of my job, you know, I go through the contracts with a fine tooth comb, but I know so many players that I've spoken to would just sign it, send it back.
That would be me.
That would be a lot of players.
Sign my life away.
And obviously a lot of players, you know, back in the day didn't necessarily have agents.
Do you help? Like, do people ask you for help, or do you say like,
100%. I mean, I've always spoken, especially to the younger players and the ones who don't have representation, I've always said, you know, come to me if there's something you're not quite sure of. But, you know, going through the contract myself, you know, I've been shocked sometimes by, because it's a standard worded contract, and I've always felt that the FA have needed to update this urgently. This should be a matter of priority. And it's obviously great now that, you know, these maternity rights and these injury rights are included. But, you know, when you go through the contract and you see things such as, you know, we have to request permission from the clubs to have a second part-time job, when the club itself won't pay you enough to actually support yourself with just the wages that they're paying, or for example, you know, kit provision and food provision, you know, all these kind of things, while some of them might make up the licensing agreements for the Championship and the WSL, if they're in a player's contract, a player then has enforceable rights that they can then bring to the club. A lot of players that I've spoken to don't know what the licensing agreements are. So it's madness. It's madness that we're sort of sitting here and talking about maternity rights in 2022.
And also, you wouldn't really know until something happens. Mm-hmm. Say you get a long-term injury, and we know that players have been let go from contracts because of that. And just news today on Tuesday that there's going to be new elements in the contract to protect players from that we know that you wouldn't know until that happens, when, you know, you do your ACL and you're going to be out for a year and they say, soz, see you later.
Absolutely. In the past, I mean, the experiences that I've had where you've had players who have gone through, you know, quite significant injuries, is that you'll be told to go to the NHS first. You'll be you know, if you break something in a training session, you'll be told to go to, you know, the NHS waiting rooms and try and see what the situation is there. And, you know, what I've always felt is that that situation wouldn't be the same if it was a Premier League player who had suffered that kind of injury. They'd be sent straight away to a private medical facilities for scans and treatment, etc. And, you know, it's just amazed me sometimes that, you know, when you've got players at this level, that they're having to rely on, you know, a very slow process to get back to, you know, rehab and recovery, when those things exist in those clubs already for male players.
Yeah, we know there's obviously still issues around insurance as well in the women's mm-hmm. game, around players having the right medical insurance to be entitled to claim things. In the announcement today around these new elements in the contract, Marie-Christine Bouchier, who is Director of Women's Football at the PFA, she makes the comparison you made, Chloe, which is about, you know, take two England internationals who play for the same club, one in the Premier League, one in the WSL. If they have the same injury, and
it says, you know, that they're going to be out for an extended period of time. Under the current WSL contract, if a player is going to be out longer than 3 months, they can be released from a club. Whereas a Premier League player, it would take them 18 months in consecutive 18 months in a 20-month period in order to be released.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the differences are so stark that it's very important to sort of bring them up to date.
I want to know, so this sick pay, which is great that they will be now receive pay while they're injured, but does that also include going to a private facility instead of having to wait? You know, we saw a couple of people who got injured during COVID and had to wait even longer to get those operations because the waiting lists and stuff had been, you know, a lot of stuff had been postponed during COVID and they weren't able to get private medical help. So it makes me wonder, does it include that? Is it going to help with stuff like that? Great that they're getting paid, but is it going to help them get back on the pitch quicker? Or is it just kind of your standard sick pay?
I can see a lot of it being left again to the club's discretion, because I think that
whether
was what
the clubs
I really
have
noticed.
Insurance, yeah. Things like that.
It's that. I think what I noticed about the contract was that it's some parts of it are so vague, and it's, you know, if the whatever the club basically feels that they can provide, then they will. So I think, you know, some of the areas of the contract need to be just a lot more specific, especially in terms of, you know, kit and uniform, where your training facilities are going to be, what time is your training going to be, because like even basic things like that aren't included in that contract. It's madness. I mean, I'm happy to send you guys copies of my contract. Well,
I feel like it's going to be something we're going to want to dig into. And this week as well, there was news around the NWSL and the NWSL Players Association announcing a CBA agreement for the first time in their history. And I think we're going to dig into that at some point. So I think we'll probably do like a very big contract focus as well, where we can get into the nitty gritty, get our in-house lawyer involved, get the highlighter pens out and really get to understand like, what's in these contracts.
Because I want to know more about that maternity, that 14 weeks, you know, because a player is obviously not going to, like someone maybe working in an office is not going to be working, if you like, right up until 8 months.
Yeah.
They're probably going to have to stop playing what, I think Helen Ward said about 3 months in. And then how do they define working? Is a certain type of training them working? Does the 14 weeks start from when they stop being available for matches? If that's the case, you know, you've pretty much used up all your maternity leave before the baby's even born. I know that one of them said that that would include 8 weeks post birth. It's just a little bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of ambiguous and unanswered questions. But one of the big questions, Chloe, which hasn't gone away because Maheta Malango, the chief executive of the PFA, has said that the issue of women's championship players being covered under the PFA has not been resolved, and the conversations around that are ongoing. And obviously that impacts you. It impacts a lot. About 250 so players in the championship.
Yep.
And it is ridiculous because some of those players are professional. Some of those players are full-time, or they are essentially balancing two full-time jobs.
I think it's that. I think it's all, I think what the PFA are trying to say, that it all balances and hinges on this definition of professionalism. And I think for us, obviously, you know, as championship players, our position is that we are paid to play football and therefore we are professionals. I mean, we give up however many hours it is of contact time per week to play football. And I think that's what's most disappointing, is that whilst you might be looking at an old-fashioned definition of professionalism in terms of the men's game, it's a completely different product and the championship is completely different to the men's championship. So I think there just needs to be a thinking outside the box situation at the moment in terms of how the championship fits in that. And I think, you know, what you're really adding is only 250 extra players to the PFA membership. But, you know, I know the PFA have been so reluctant to include women's championship players. And I think that's one of the things that whilst I absolutely appreciate that maternity rights has been something they've been fighting for, I do wonder, where is the PFA mandate to negotiate on women's championship players' behalves in terms of the contract when we're not members? So where was
so you haven't been included in the discussions?
And I think it's that. I think, you know, putting my lawyer hat on, if someone came to me and expected me to negotiate on their behalf and they're not a client and they're not giving me the instructions, I'm thinking, what mandate do I have to do that? So, you know, I think the PFA need to really reconsider that. And I know they've made comments now about potentially having the championship included, but there's no time frame given.
It feels like they're kicking the can down the road a little bit, and they'll talk about it every now and then, but it's like you need to actually see some action and some
outcomes. I think also when the WSL moved into its new era, the FA stressed how it wasn't about just being professional, it was about this full-time term. And I think with the PFA, I think perhaps they've lost sense of that because they're so focused on professionalism rather than full time, whereas a lot of championship players are full time, but they may not be being paid in a professional manner. If you get where I'm going.
It's ridiculous. If you're a lawyer like 3 days a week instead of 5 days a week, you're still a professional lawyer. I don't get this kind of, you know, looking at how many days or hours or if it's part-time or full. You're still a professional at the job that you're doing. If you're working two jobs, you are professional at the jobs you're doing. So it's a bit of a, it's semantics. It sounds a bit
But I suppose in, you know, in law, it's all about semantics, isn't it? It's all about words.
It's all linguistics.
It's all about jargon.
But I think even if
ways.
You could just take away the word professionalism, even if you just said we would accept membership from WSL and championship players, cut it there. That's absolutely all you need to do at this stage. It makes no sense that you've got a professional body that only supports the top elite level of women's football and supports about 8 levels of men's football. You know, you adding 250 extra women's players to your roster is not going to make any difference. The biggest difference is going to be how many male players that you currently support. So, you know, it's the PFA just have a lot to do. Just let us in.
Knock, knock.
And weirdly enough, hello, I'm actually a member PFA. Because you get membership through being a WSL player. So I'm actually a member of the PFA. So when I say this, I say it's on behalf of, you know, current championship
so
players.
So you retained your membership from being in the WSL?
You retain your membership. But as a WSL player who now plays for the championship, I've got a lower tier membership. So you get relegated in terms of what you're, or the provisions that you can get. But what I find really funny about the PFA is that they're absolutely happy to provide all these additional services to youth boys academies and things like that, but say that the championship is too far out of their remit.
Well, we're going to carry on talking about this. I think we should do a focus episode on player contracts and player rights and things like that. And maybe we'll even get a current like WSL or retired WSL player on as well to talk about that, because I think it's one that we've really got to dig into. Maybe an agent as well. I think there's so much to uncover in this. And if you need help, call 1-800 Chloe Morgan.
Here all week.
Hotline. But no, Chloe, it's great to chat to this with you because we need your insight on these things.
Next week, you're wearing two hats. We've decided this. Yeah.
It is. It's going to be a barrister's wig and a Peter Chet
and a gabble
helmet.
Where you just...
Yeah, so that we've decided
down whenever
a barrister's wig and then the kind of scrum hat that Peter Cech wears, and that
obsessed
is her, you know, player,
I'll just exchange
lawyer.
Hats,
obsessed mm-hmm. with that.
Depending on what opinion I need to give.
You back in the dugout this weekend? You getting your Sam Allardyce on this weekend?
I mean, I'd love to if they'll have me, but my performance was so strong in the dugout.
You get an iPad this week so you can just do some little like thing.
Yeah, but I'll probably end up just doodling on
it. Or you get one of those Hope Powell gigantic whiteboards.
I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping to be sort of back in the squad this week.
Yeah. Fingers getting there?
It's getting there, yeah.
Okay,
it's
cool.
You know, I've done my time in the cast now. It's pretty dramatic. But we've got Bristol City this weekend.
It?
You can absolutely sign it.
Yeah, we'll get the biros out on that. Bristol City this weekend.
Bristol
right?
City, big away game. So I think obviously off the back of last weekend, we're feeling confident. We need to go in and obviously win these games and get these points under our belts. So, yeah.
Where are you this
Spoken
weekend?
Like a true professional. Hopefully Arsenal Man United.
I will
on
be
Saturday.
There as well. And early then, kickoff as well. I like an early kickoff. Yeah. 12:30 is quite civilised.
Yeah. And then Spurs, Brighton, me on Sunday. I cannot remember where Sophie's going, but
who cares?
Well, I mean,
you'll see her at home.
Sophie, I do care.
That is it for today's episode of Upfront on Football Ramble Presents. If you've got any questions for us, please tweet us at Football Ramble. @FloydTweet for myself, @GirlsOnTheBall for Rachel, or @Morgie_89. And we'll see you all next week. Have you ever sung your girlfriend, Michael Bublé?
No. I sing songs at her.
Oh, would you sing
at her? At her. No, but it's just like random shit.
Listen to my song. Do you write originals? Do you write any original songs?
I don't write original songs, no, but it's just like random shit that happens throughout the day.
Like what?
Or like, I don't know.
Let's make a cup of tea.
I broke
like
my finger today.
Yeah.
Do not go in the bathroom for at least 10 minutes.
Perfect. Perfect.
I'm crying.
My ribs are actually
I hate
so
the fact
sore.
That is recorded.
Yeah. Welcome to hell.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices?
And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.